Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. We're going to get to our geeky science rocks today in our third hour of the show. It's going to be interesting. In the second hour, Judge Jim Gray is going to be with us. One of America's more famous and notorious judges who is strongly coming out for the decriminalization of all drugs. It's fascinating. Barack Obama just had a press conference. He said, you know, you can get elected by playing it straight. You can get elected by doing the right thing. The public trust has been violated. This is in the case of Governor Blago. He says he was certain that his office had no involvement around any deal-making for the Senate seat. But he opened his press conference by referring to the most recent bad economic news. Jobless claims are at the highest level in 26 years and repeated his call for Congress to help Detroit. The Republicans, of course, in the Senate, talking about holding this thing up because they do not want any money going to the unions if they cannot, to the unions. Bottom line, period. They view the unions as their to-the-death political enemies, and they will have many of them nothing to do with this. So, and then just very quickly, State Attorney General Lisa Madigan, this in the state of Illinois, is threatening to go to the Illinois Supreme Court to have Governor Blagojevich removed. In an interview with CNN, she says he shows no inclination to quit. Maybe things will change today or tomorrow, but it won't be terribly long before she goes to the Attorney General and says, just declare this guy unfit and kick it, or the Supreme Court or something. You know, she's the Supreme Court have him removed. On Monday, the Illinois legislature is going to be meeting to, at the very least, strip him of his power to appoint a United States senator. Susan Poucher is with us. Susan is the author, the fitness maven. She was dubbed the Lenny Bruce of wellness by Shape Magazine. Susan Poucher, P-O-W-T-E-R, online.com, her website. Her new book, The Politics of Stupid, The Cure for Obesity. This is a very real, actually a political issue. Today, in today's New York Times, one of the, frankly, I think one of the very best opinion pieces in today's New York Times was by Nick Kristof, who talks about how he's paid $500 a year by the federal government not to grow food on the forest land that he owns in Oregon, and saying we need to do away with the Secretary of Agriculture, replace it with the Secretary of Food, because 35 years ago, or 100 years ago, 35% of us were farmers. Now it's only 2% of us. And he says the Department of Agriculture is subsidizing the least healthy calories in the supermarket, high fructose corn syrup, hydrogenated soy oil, doing very little for farmers. And that, you know, we should, and he says the problem isn't farmers, it's the farm lobby hijacked by industrial operators. Susan, welcome to the show.
Well, I mean, Tom Hartman, you're a very smart man. Millions of people know that who listen to you every day. And you couldn't have given me a better segue, buddy, because I am Obama-ing wellness all over the world, i.e. the Internet. There is no more political an issue because there is no political anything in this country. It's a lobbying system. And $276 billion food industries are absolutely connected to obesity, absolutely, as are all the other corporations that are profiting greatly from disease, obesity, heart disease. And the power, unlike New York Times opinion, which I completely agree with, by the way, but it is not the solution, and this is where these experts miss it every time. There's a $276 billion food industry. 85% of their consumer market are women who are doing grocery shopping, as I have for 25 years because I have three children and have been grocery shopping for 25 years. We have all the power. And that is the point of the politics of stupid.
Yeah, your subtitle is The Cure for Obesity. One in five children in America are obese. We have this, mm-hmm. this wave sweeping the country of
childhood obesity has increased 54% in the last 15 years, and I was a 260-pound woman years ago, and I lost over 130 pounds, and I've never found it again.
Yeah, in fact, you were a New York Times bestselling author for your book Stop the Insanity and this whole movement in the 80s of Stop the Insanity. And so what, there are studies that indicate that maybe 1 in 10 people have a gene that might predispose them to it.
1% of the population is overfat and unfit because they have some genetic whatever it is, 1%. The other 99% of everyone listening, if you are overfat and unfit and don't love the way you look and feel, here's what I found out at 260 pounds. I found out that there wasn't a body on the planet Earth that manufactured fat, that you have to eat it to get that way, and you have to stop moving for long enough that you're not burning enough compared to what you're taking in. It is that simple. There's your degree. Now, Stop the Insanity was the decade of the 90s, actually. It was the whole decade. And it was 7 books, 9 videos, and 4 best-selling infomercials. And then I left everything and everybody and had another baby at 40, which is where I've been for the last 10 years. And I have watched deliberately and waited because the consumer has risen, as I knew they would. The waters have been parted. It is not news to anyone now that the 5 top killers in this country are directly connected to the high-protein foods that the resurrection from the high-protein dead diet is recommending. People know what's happening now. They know the foods are just so preserved and so pasteurized and so chemical-filled. And the solution is the same. You have to eat, breathe, move, and think your way back to a life of energy and strength. And it's a mathematical thing, not an emotional thing.
Right,
if you live in a human body, unless you're an alien.
Exactly. A pigeon, for example. Your book, we're talking with Susan Powter, P-O-W-T-E-R, SusanPowterOnline.com, her website, The Politics of Stupid, her new book. Susan, are you suggesting, you talked about this dead diet, are you suggesting a vegetarian or a vegan diet?
Listen, here's the deal. You know, it's really interesting because I know a lot of vegetarian people who eat a ton of high-fat foods. Here's what it is, and this is why I like shows like yours, because it's not even a suggestion. It is an absolute fact, and there's not a human being. No doctor would be stupid enough to argue with this. If you live in a human body, you want to feel well and look well, and absolute fact, it's an AMA fact, 85% of all disease is directly attributed to lifestyle. So if you want to really have 85% control over heart disease, let's keep going, stroke, cancers, all disease, lifestyle diseases, not that the AMA has admitted that, but the fact is, if you want to just feel well, you have to get oxygen into your body every day, because it is A, the most vital ingredient in wellness, and B, the only thing you can't live without for more than 5 minutes. Don't go any further than there. Next thing you have to do is understand that 65% of the average American's daily caloric intake is processed crap. So you have to eat something whole and real more often than not. That's it. Don't even worry about what. We can get all that information because it's
so more life. Often than not, eat raw. Fresh.
Whole, as in grains, beans, fruits, and vegetables. Whole foods that come from the mother, not the vats of man.
I see.
They're not processed, pasteurized, packaged, pummeled, and poisoned.
But isn't bread, for example, a form of packaging or processing at the
very least? Well, bread is nothing but most of it, total crap in this country. It's terrible, but refined white. And, well, listen, 150 years ago, I did an infomercial and I asked a question. Somebody said to me, how do you know if it's whole food? And I said, all you need to do is ask one question. Did it grow that way? Have you ever seen an oatmeal tree?
Yeah, right.
Okay, so the reason I say that is not to talk about oatmeal, but let's talk about it for a second. Yeah. Can you pretty much figure out, if you have an ounce of common sense, that the oatmeal manufacturer, especially the ones manufacturing that instant 1 minute, nothing cooks in a minute, people, loaded with sugar crap, they're the ones telling you that it's good for you, but what is the original food? What is the original food? It's an oat groat. Now, it doesn't mean you need to know what to do with an oat groat. It means you need to ask the question, and it will incite, eat, breathe, move, and think your way back to a life of energy and strength. That is real. Every day. Eat, breathe, move, and think. I got to eat something real. I got to eat something real. I got to move a little bit. That's all I got. I got to be, maybe I should try this lean muscle mass stuff. How to schlep through the day and do it is the only reason I came back to work. Without the internet, I would not be here, Tom. I would not have bothered.
Yeah, over on your website, you've got, people can do, workouts with you online, and it's
exciting because you've been around, you've been around a long time, for God's sake. You've heard a lot of stuff.
Yes.
Only now can I get the truth about, I manufacture everything. I have a lifestyle exchange program, which is 13 videos of the truth. I mean, if you're watching movies about, just watch movies about wellness, would you? I do them, I own them, they're there, you never get a price better because I don't need a store shelf anymore. And it's global. That's why I'm doing it. You know, The Politics of Stupid is in the lifestyle exchange program, which people can get directly from me. But what you get when you come to my website is me telling the truth about Whatever, whenever, all the time. And that's what...
And you're saying you can actually cure obesity.
Oh, there is a cure for obesity. Listen, I have lost over 130 pounds. I've never gained it again. The only way I'm ever going to gain that weight back is if I stop moving and start eating tons of shit for a very long time. That's the truth. That's the mechanical, mathematical, if you live in a human body, truth. I don't do those things because I've learned how to implement them. And it is a matter of exchanging a lifestyle that isn't working. The all-American lifestyle isn't working. And you have to exchange that lifestyle for a style of life that does. And inactivity doesn't work. Activity does. Processed crap food doesn't work. Whole real food does. Weakness doesn't work. Lean muscle mass does. Cardio endurance. Let's just keep going. Now I can show you how to do it without 50 companies in the way.
I got it. Susan Powter online, POWTERonline.com, the website, the new book, The Politics of Stupid. Thank you, Susan.
Always good to talk to you, Tom.
Good talking with you, too. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Uh-oh, the TSA got him?
His bags were too weird, they're posting his bum, they're checking his beard, he's getting the one. Santa isn't leaving the ground. He'd take a flight if he could, they thought his suit looked weird. They profiled him as bad, not good, just because of his long beard. They'll post a reward, cause last time he flew, with shampoo. TSA does not like his ilk. He might bring on some cookies and milk.
There you go. Look out, Santa! The TSA will get you. Oh, there's a lot of good people who work at the TSA. I got to say that. I've never had a run-in or problem with them of any consequence, and some of them have been very nice to me over the years. But it's so funny to think of Santa getting, hey, you got shampoo. All right, Nick Kristof in today's New York Times kicks this topic off by saying, forget about the Department of Agriculture. We need to have, at a cabinet level, the Secretary of Food, because everybody eats food, and the food we're eating is poisoning us. This is, in a very real way for Americans, even though it's not portrayed this way, because you've got a multi-trillion-dollar, in all probability, but certainly a multi-hundred-billion-dollar food industry. Susan says $600 billion-a-year food industry that is pumping all this money into making sure that, A, we're buying their products, and, B, that the news media is not reporting on their products because the news media carries their advertising. And I'll tell you, back in the 70s, I was a partner, I guess, more or less, in an ad agency with a good dear friend of mine, Terry O'Connor. And our largest client was one of America's largest food companies. Now, we were one of their smaller suppliers. We did their shelf talkers. We designed one of their cereal boxes. And I helped write a, as I recall, 24-page booklet called Sugar, the Essential Nutrient, that went out to some, I don't know, 30 million school children, for which I am still, I'm sure, carrying around a big karmic load, big karmic debt. So Nick Kristof says, let's have a Secretary of Food, because we all eat. Only 2% of us are farmers. We don't need a Secretary of Agriculture anymore. We used to have a Secretary of Agriculture because one out of three of us used to be farmers. 35% of us were farmers when the Secretary of Agriculture was created. But now it's only 2% of us, one out of 50. One out of one of us, or 100 out of 100 of us, eat. So let's have a Secretary of Food whose charge is to do something about the fact that we are losing more Americans every year than we lose to war, than we lose in Iraq, than we lost in Vietnam at the height of the war. We're losing more Americans every year to our food supply. And nobody wants to talk about it. Adbusters did just a brilliant ad a couple of years ago in which they point out that every time somebody gets diagnosed with cancer, and the same is true of diabetes, the same is true of all of the obesity-related diseases, and the other diseases that are associated with lousy nutrition, I mean, there's a in our geeky science segment, our third hour, we're going to be talking about how, you know, they find that people who eat blueberries and more fruit tend not to get dementia and Alzheimer's. It's just, it could be just as simple as eating fruit for breakfast. I mean, Louise brought me some fresh orange juice this morning. Thank you, Louise. But here, this is the Adbusters ad. This is just, you know, well said here by that.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product. Trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
Yeah, let's stop, you know, let's stop this crazy thing of saying, okay, if you have more people who become obese because they're eating processed foods and crap, and because we're shoving corn syrup into soft drinks that we are now selling in the cafeterias and hallways of our elementary schools because it's profitable for the schools, because the Republicans have stripped all the money, all the funding out of our schools. So the schools are trying to make an extra 50 cents here and there on a Coke. And as the consequence of this, we've got this epidemic of obesity in the United States among our kids, which is causing 10-year-olds, 8-year-olds to be on statin drugs, which are incredibly destructive and dangerous. And, you know, I mean, they may save some lives in some regards, but let's say incredibly high in side effects. And by the way, Susan, you know, let go a word that shouldn't go on the radio in the last segment. I want to apologize to you for that and for not catching it. It just went flying by. She was talking so fast. In fact, hopefully you missed it. In any case, I just wanted to put that on the record. But in any case, here we have this huge industry that is driving Oprah. Oprah comes out today, or not, in the last day or two, actually. A piece in today's Daily Beast, dailybeast.com. Jessica Klein, The Great Binge, talking about how Oprah has acknowledged that she's gained 40 pounds. And she says, this is Oprah Winfrey, she says, "It seemed as if the struggle I'd have with weight my entire adult life is now officially over. I felt completely defeated. I thought, I give up. I give up. Fat wins." And, you know, the sad thing is that this could mean that she dies younger than she would otherwise. Fat cells produce estrogen. Estrogen feeds a whole bunch of different types of cancers. It messes up the metabolism of both insulin, which has to do with, you know, sugar and diabetes and the ability of cells to repair themselves and the health of the cardiovascular system, and oddly melatonin, which regulates sleep cycles. 866-303-2270. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-303-2270.
Minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman radio program. No suck-up interviews with big-name politicians. This is real talk radio. Okay. Legacy of Secrecy, the long shadow of the JFK assassination by Lamar Waldron and Tom Hartman. What we are going to give away today to the person who Sean is most pleased by on the posts, the blog posts over at TomHartman.com. Check it out. And This is genuinely strange. And here's the not-so-strange part about it first. Roman Catholic Cardinal Jorge Medina, the Cardinal of Chile, in his homily at Mass on Sunday, talking about how terrible it was that Madonna came to Argentina last week and caused a, quote, "crazy enthusiasm and impure thoughts," end quote, He said, this woman comes here in an incredibly shameless manner. She provokes a crazy enthusiasm, an enthusiasm of lust, lustful thoughts, impure thoughts. That was his objection to Madonna showing up. An objection he presented at a mass he was conducting in honor of Augusto Pinochet, the former Chilean dictator who murdered 3,200 dissidents during his rule from 1973 to 1990. Yeah. Now, you tell me that's not crazy. We have a food industry that is killing us. We have a health industry that is making a profit off the food industry killing us. And in many cases, they are the same corporations, the same transnational corporations, or they have interlocking boards of directors. And nobody seems to want to talk about this war on the American people by corporate America. Nobody, we aren't having hearings where they're saying, well, how much money are you making, Mr. CEO? Did you come in here in your private jet paid for by the deaths of thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Americans every year? American children, American teenagers, American adults? No. No. Ain't happening. Kevin in Santa Fe, New Mexico, listening on KTRC. Hey, Kevin, what's up?
Hey, I wanted to talk about the role of speculators in this, who are on the same, they're on the same level as the oil speculators, and now that they've pulled their money out of oil, they want to go into there. And I want to get it out there that your listeners need to support Levin and Harkin's bill to end excessive speculation.
Food is a commodity, and they're speculating in food. And in many cases, when these speculators hit a particular food or a particular market and spikes like oil did or like gold did, whatever, although gold seems to be more tied to the crash of the dollar. But what you see is that the speculation, you're right, you're absolutely right. It does harm Americans. And perhaps more importantly, you see, I mean, we're looking at worldwide food shortages. We're 7 billion people right now, and it's just nuts. Eddie in Portland. Hey, Eddie. Eddie, you're on the air.
Yeah, I'm on the air. Thank you.
You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to tell you how much I appreciate that I actually hear somebody talking about something I've been looking into for the last couple of years since I've read a particular book about this subject. And it's really glad to hear. I'm really glad to hear that somebody's actually talking about it publicly on the air, and people are actually finally starting to hear some of this information.
Well, thank you, Eddie. Did you have a comment or question, or was that it?
No, I actually wanted to go ahead and tell you the information, the source of that information, and that would be The Natural Cures They Don't Want You to Know About by Kevin Trudeau.
Oh, yeah, I've seen it.
And a lot of people, when I first read the book, I kind of thought, oh, man, this guy's just ranting and raving, and he's a conspiracy theorist and all this, but... Yep.
You're absolutely right. There are so many things out there. I mean, it's like, for example, some people get leg cramps, particularly at night, and there are all these drugs for them, right? You know, restless leg syndrome, this, that, and the other thing. Take some apple cider vinegar. Just take it, get some of the old-fashioned health food store apple cider vinegar, kind of with a crud on the bottom. You shake it up, and just take a tablespoon of it. Bang! Or you can get tablets as well, and take some tablets of apple cider vinegar. Knocks out leg cramps. For example, I mean, you know, there's all these things. There are foods, there are herbs, there are so many. But most important, eat well. I mean, this is just straightforward stuff. Mark in Middleville, Michigan. Hey, Mark.
Hey, just a little background note. My grandfather's been involved in this since the 30s. Mm-hmm. Corporate food really started taking off in the Eisenhower administration.
Yeah, in the
50s. They repealed the Stimson Act. And started subsidizing farmers rather than protecting them through tariffs. And that's what brought grain prices down real low to allow these multinational food companies to take $2 a bushel corn, which they're selling now, and turn it into, you know, five.
That's interesting. I didn't know specifically about that. What was the Stimson Act, and when and by whom was it repealed, and how did that happen?
Well, it was vetoed twice by Roosevelt, because he said he didn't want poor children to pay too much for milk. But it was finally passed in 1941, and my grandfather believed that it ended the Depression. because it allowed farmers to make a decent price for their crops. They weren't having to compete with foreign nationals. He was having to deal with the fact you could buy beef from Cuba for $9 a head.
Yeah.
And
how do you spell Stinson?
Texas.
How do you spell the name of the act?
I think it's Stimson, S-T-I-M-P-S-O-N. I really can't find much about it online, but there's a book by Charles Walters called Unforgiven, and he interviewed some of the last people that were alive that had been involved in that.
That's very interesting.
And what happened is that the 46th Congress with Republicans had put this law through, but Truman wouldn't act on it, and when Eisenhower came in, he did.
Yeah.
And to keep the economy afloat, they started subsidizing farmers from at his administration.
Interesting. Mark,
and then when
you
Reagan what's
go
that?
Ahead. Finish your sentence.
When Reagan came in office, he ended a lot of the subsidies, and that's when the farm depressions really started hitting in the 80s.
Yeah, because they had created an artificial system that that required these large, and now you've got all these farmers. I mean, I grew up in Michigan, and a lot of my friends lived on small farms near and around Lansing, and in particular when I went to college, the people you meet there, and their families had in many cases had farms in the same land, in central Michigan, there, southern central Michigan, for over 100 years. And now they're tenant farmers. There's big transnational corporations own the land, and their families are basically just renters, and it's a disaster. Thanks a lot for the call, Mark. I appreciate it. Ray in Cleveland, Ohio. Hey, Ray.
Hi. One thing I never hear talked about when people are talking about an epidemic of obesity is food additives that mess with your appetite, and specifically natural flavor.
Right, which is also known as monosodium glutamate generally. MSG.
Yes, family, they're all in a family called free glutamates, and there's a lot of products that say no MSG, but they contain natural flavor, yeast extract, those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I have eaten items where I felt great distress after eating them, and the only thing that kind of took that problem away is eating more. So it's put in a lot of restaurants, and almost all fried chicken sold anywhere contains it. I haven't eaten that for years and years. And now it's being kind of hidden under the general term spices.
Yeah.
I know
what you're talking about, because when I eat MSG, I actually get migraine headaches, and I couldn't figure it out. I was in, this was, 6-7 years ago, it was probably more like 10 or 15 years ago, I was in San Francisco teaching a workshop, and the hotel that I was staying at, I think it was the Hyatt down on Fisherman's Wharf, and on one corner of that hotel is a Chinese restaurant, and on the other diagonal corner is a Japanese restaurant, and I was eating at these two restaurants, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, or lunch and dinner anyway, and for a couple of days, and I got this just blinding, I mean, literally it blinded me. I lost my entire field of central vision while I was in front of a room with, 150 people giving a talk. And so that afterwards, I went, and I thought I was having a stroke, but I just tried to push through it. Afterwards, I went to Kaiser Permanente Hospital there, and the guy who saw me was an Asian physician, a doc of Chinese ancestry, and he said, "We see this a lot with Caucasians who eat a lot of MSG." He said, "I've never seen it with an Asian person." He said, "It must be something genetic." They cause hunger, and they cause and re-regulate essentially. And by the way, salt does the same thing, which is one of the reasons that they put salt in these things. I mean, we've got basically and sugar. I mean, why is there sugar in the buns of hamburgers at fast food joints to make it addictive? To make it, why do they put sugar and salt in French fries? To make them have it for me. And, a lot of fat there. All of these things are basically, basically is the wrong word, but foundationally, they're not only bad for you, but they are designed to cause people to eat more of the same, and it's a destructive downward spiral of food and addiction and food and addiction and food and addiction that people get into, and to the best of my knowledge, the only way to break out of it is to stop eating that stuff and start eating healthy things, and get some exercise like Susan was talking about. I mean, it's not rocket science. But, we've got to stop selling it, we've got to stop making it, or perhaps start taxing it. Now, that's something that'll make Euron Brook totally crazy. Let's tax fast food and junk food.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
Vietnam vet with a cardboard sign, sitting there by the left turn line. Flag on a wheelchair flapping in the breeze, one leg missing and both hands free. No one's paying much mind to him. The VA budget's just stretched so thin, and there's more coming back from the Mideast war. We can't make it here anymore. And that big old building was a textile mill. It fed our kids and it paid our bills, but they turned us out and they closed the doors. We can't make it here anymore.
9.5 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a couple of quick news flashes. The Ohio Senate has passed a bill to do away with same-day registration and voting. The Republicans Ohio, this is being promoted State Senator Bill Seitz, a Cincinnati Republican, sponsored the bill. And he says it's impossible to know whether fraud occurred in November because people were able to register and vote on the same day. 13,000 people, by the way, did so the Senate in Ohio passed this bill 19-1. Secondly, apropos of the bumper music coming in, 3 million jobs in the auto industry, a $15 billion bailout. Now, Louise and I were driving home yesterday, and she said, what's the math on that? And we just, like, you know, sat there in the car and said, okay, 3 million jobs goes into $15 billion how many times? Well, 3 million goes into $15 billion the same as, I mean, you just start lopping off zeros, same as 300,000 goes into, well, actually, you just delete a whole bunch of zeros, and you get 3 into 15,000. And 15,000 divided by 3 is $5,000. So that's $5,000. The auto bailout, the GM Ford Chrysler bailout is going to be $5,000 per worker. Alabama paid Mercedes $255,000 per worker to move a Mercedes factory to Alabama. But Richard Shelby and the other bozo Republican senator from Alabama, I'm forgetting his name right now, are both on the floor of the Senate hysterically bloviating about how we can't give $5,000 per worker to the workers in Detroit because, oh my God, we're going to be supporting a union. It is just, Jeff Sessions, thank you, Sean, it's absolutely crazy. And this now falls into the category of the show elements that my two blonde producers sitting here in the studio with me made me do, to paraphrase Keith Olbermann. Yep, there's an all, this alert, it's an all, the all pink keyboard. This is a real product. Swaps out standard keys with funnier, dumber named keys. The backspace, this is a blonde keyboard. The backspace key now says, oops, and the entire row of function keys spells out useless keys. Hit the dollar sign, you get the sound of a cash register clinking. Blondes can get a little technical and special use keys. They type out, OMG, oh my God, and ALI, absolutely love it, or XOXOXO. My favorite, the caps lock key now says, warning, size XXL letters. The keyboard has already been released in the UK with success. It's compatible with Macs, Windows, and Linux, and the question is whether or not Paris Hilton will be getting one for Christmas. And yes, they actually did make me do that. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. George in Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, George, back to the food topic.
Hey, good morning, Tom. On the subject of eating and how we're going to change for the better, I think it's time we really seriously consider heavily taxing meat and meat products. First of all, as you know, it's a very inefficient way of feeding people.
Yep.
We take grains, we convert them over to animal
and
food.
Massive amounts of water.
Yeah, and massive amounts of water and pollution create complete. I mean, I remember back in the 70s studying the Chesapeake Bay area and some of the Mississippi Delta areas where the slaughter plants, the nitrates were draining down through the riverbeds.
Oh, yeah, and they're creating red tides. And Nick Kristof points out that a hog factory with 5,000 hogs, and they're not farms, they're factories, a hog factory of 5,000 hogs creates more fecal matter, creates more waste than a suburban community of 20,000 human beings. But a suburban community of 20,000 human beings is required to have a septic system or waste disposal system. A hog farm of 5,000 hogs, which produces more waste, is not required to have any kind of waste disposal system.
Yes.
This is insane.
Growth industry could be creating food products from grain here in America. Overseas in Taiwan and in China, Veggie One is, I think, located in Taiwan. These industries are huge growth industries.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and frankly, in the United States, I mean, it used to be just the Seventh-day Adventists. You know, Loma Linda, they made all these products that looked and tasted like meat, for people who wanted to be vegetarian but wanted to leave that stuff behind. And it worked out really great. Good point, George. And we could make a – it's like, going solar or going to an electric car instead of a gasoline car. It's the right thing to do. Amy in Rockville, Maryland. Hey, Amy, you're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, I was going to make a similar point about the work of T. Colin Campbell. I can't remember if you've had him on your show or not, but in the China study, he makes an extremely compelling argument for connections between animal protein and various diseases, particularly cancer, and particularly milk protein.
Yeah, and my old friend John Robbins has written extensively on this in the first edition of Prophet's Way. I had in the back of the book a 3 or 4 page listing of all the costs associated with enormous amounts of animal food being produced in the country and how destructive it was. So yeah, good point, Amy. Thank you very much, Joan in Portland. Hey, Joan.
June, right?
June. I'm sorry. Hi, June.
Yep. Okay. National epidemic of obesity, especially among children. I think it's stress has a lot to do with stress in the family. I was a food addict for many, many years and just ended. Mm-hmm. But I do believe in eat like a king in the morning, a prince at noon, a pauper at night. And I'm a vegetarian.
Well,
it has nothing to do with health. It just had to do with no longer wanting to be part of eating the flesh of a once living animal. And I'm in excellent health at 84. And fanatic about exercise and no medication, no prescription medication.
God bless
anyway,
you.
So there you are.
Yep.
And thank
very,
you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you very much for the call. That's great. 84, no medication, health fanatic, a vegetarian. See, this isn't rocket science. It's not necessarily easy. I mean, it's when you're addicted to McDonald's, it's not easy to kick the habit, but it's not impossible. Stick around. We'll be right back with Judge Jim Gray. This is going to be fascinating.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
So, from food addiction to drug addiction, how have the policies of the United States government, this is something you can lay at the feet of Democrats and Republicans alike, frankly, it's not a partisan issue. In fact, there have been, George Shultz, of all people, came out against the war on drugs, along with, Kevin Zeese, who ran Nader's campaign. I mean, it's right across the spectrum. William F. Buckley was opposed to it, the war on drugs. What can we do about the destruction of America and America's communities by modern-day prohibition and by this poorly named, inappropriately named, and incredibly destructive so-called war on drugs? Judge Jim Gray is with us. He is an author, an Orange County trial judge, spokesperson for LEAP, which is Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, a former federal prosecutor in Los Angeles, a criminal attorney in the Navy JAG Corps, and a veteran judge of the Superior Court in Orange County in Southern California. Judge Jim Gray, and his website, by the way, judgejimgray.com, G-R-A-Y. Judge Jim Gray, welcome to the show.
Thank you, thank you. It's nice to be with you, Tom. I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you. Your book, blurbed by Walter Cronkite. This book drives a stake through the heart of the failed war on drugs and gives us options and hope for the battles to come. Milton Friedman, George Shultz, Gary Johnson, the former governor of New Mexico. The book is Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, a judicial indictment of the war on drugs. And Judge Gray, I remember as a kid, my dad grew up on the south side of Chicago. And when it was a poor immigrant community, his father was a Norwegian immigrant. His father and mother were Norwegian immigrants to Chicago. I mean, they literally moved there from Norway. And in one of these immigrant communities, and he used to tell me stories of, you know, they'd sit on the in the summer, they'd sit on the steps outside the row houses, and Dad would run down to the speakeasy that was run by Al Capone and buy a bucket of beer and bring it back for his dad and his brothers and their friends. And, you know, every now and then in the neighborhood, you'd hear the machine guns go off. You know, there'd be gunfights. This was during Prohibition. And the Prohibition went away, and Al Capone went away. The gunfights went away. Why have we not been able to connect the dots between what happened with the end of alcohol prohibition and what would happen with the end of, for example, marijuana prohibition, or even, for that matter, hard drug prohibition?
Well, Tom, I think there are two answers to that. One is we're fighting decades of rhetoric where you and I and your father were all raised pretty much the same way, to equate heroin or harder drugs with prison. And, you know, they're certainly harmful without question, but we've been raised not to think about it. I was a former drug warrior. I didn't think about it when I was in the United States Attorney's Office. I prosecuted those cases with whole heart. It's only thereafter I started to look and see what I was doing. So we just need to address the fact that we're all kind of programmed to go this direction. But the second is, it's money, Tom. Every federal agency we have gets extra money literally earmarked in its budget to fight the war on drugs. And it's not just the obvious ones like the military and the Department of State and the DEA, but it's the Bureau of Land Management and the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Department of Agriculture, and they don't want to lose the money. You know, I've spoken to myself two members of Congress, sitting members of Congress, actually from Orange County, which is a pretty conservative area, and they individually told me, Jim, you know, you're right. We all pretty much know in Washington the war on drugs is not winnable, but it's eminently fundable, and we're addicted to the drug war funding. And I think that's the answer to your question.
We've got a bunch of contractors. We've got, you know, the drug war equivalents of Halliburton and Bechtel out there, and it wouldn't surprise me if Halliburton and Bechtel were in this. But I mean,
absolutely.
You know, you've got these big lobbyists who are funding the Let's Rebuild Iraq. I mean, we just spent, for example, $700 million on an air base in Afghanistan last week. I mean, it was appropriated and spent.
Yeah.
And you've got all these lobbyists for this. So now we've got lobbyists for the war on drugs, the big prison industry, the private prison industry, for example.
Sure. Sure. You know, the Prison Guards Union is the strongest political lobby group in the state of California, and pretty much that's true all around the nation. But what we and all of our Confederates need to understand is we have two big problems in this area, Tom. One is drug problems, and they certainly are severe. You know, these drugs in our communities can be dangerous. I don't use heroin. I haven't ever heard anyone say being a heroin addict is a good thing. Drug problems are there. But the second problem dwarfs that, and that is drug money problems. Because, you know, people are being beheaded now down in Mexico and killed all around the world, not because of drugs, but because of drug money. And it's the drug money problems that are far, far more severe than the drug problems themselves. So here the cure is much worse than the disease.
Right. It's just like during alcohol prohibition, the price of alcohol or the price of access to alcohol went up as the availability went down, and this created opportunities for organized crime.
And that's exactly right, and that's what we're living in drug prohibition today. We're still in prohibitionary times with the same result.
Right, and how do you respond to people who say, well, that's all well and good, Judge Jim Gray, and, you know, it makes perfect sense, but, you know, I'm the parent of a 10-year-old or a 5-year-old or a 20-year-old or whatever, fill in the blank, and I don't want my kids coming into or living in a world where anybody can get drugs cheaply, because I don't want them to end up as drug addicts.
Tom, you show a great deal of insight, because that is exactly the question that needs to be asked and answered. And the answer is because we do accept these problems, so-called, with our drug policy in order to keep these drugs away from our children. But the reality is that we are putting our children in harm's way because of drug prohibition for each of two really important reasons. The first is, ask your kids, ask your high school age kids, etc., like I do, and they'll tell you the same thing, which is it's easier for them to get marijuana or any other illegal drug if they want to, that's the key, than it is alcohol. Why? Because alcohol is regulated and controlled by the government, and the illegal drugs are controlled by illegal drug dealers, and they don't ask for ID. So it's easier for our kids to get cocaine than it is a six-pack of beer because of drug prohibition. And the second is, you know, we have a lot of adult drug dealers out there that basically understand that for a chump change, for $50 in cash, they can get the services of all the 15, 16, 17-year-old kids that they want to use in their drug deals. Why would they do that? Well, for small amounts of money, they can use them as gophers, they can use them as lookouts, they can use them as couriers. I see this all the time in drug court, in juvenile court. And then, once they have them in there, as soon as their reliability is established, they trust them to go out and sell small amounts of drugs in the communities. Why do they do this? Because they make more money and the kids make more money. So ask yourself this question. If you have a 15-year-old kid selling drugs in their communities, who are they going to sell to? People like you and me? Nonsense. They're going to sell to their 14, 15, 16-year-old peers, thus recruiting more children to a lifestyle of drug usage and drug selling. And it is all caused by our policy of drug prohibition. So we're putting our kids in harm's way because of this, even though we're doing it in effect to try to keep them away from it.
We're talking with Judge Jim Gray, judgejimgray.com, his website, G-R-A-Y, his book, Why Our Drug Laws Have Failed and What We Can Do About It, A Judicial Indictment of the War on Drugs. Judge Gray, there is a frankly shocking chapter in your book about how the war on drugs has eviscerated, at the very least, the Fourth Amendment of the Constitution and broadly turned America into a country that its founders wouldn't recognize.
Absolutely. You know, where's Paul Revere is the way I respond to this. We have lost more of our civil liberties because of the war on drugs than anything in the history of our country. You know, and ask yourself, are we in better shape today than we were 5 years ago because of the war on drugs? And the answer is no, but still, well, or 40 or whatever you want to say since 1913, but we're losing our civil liberties and you never get them back. So we need to address this. The United States of America leads the world in incarcerating our people, both by sheer numbers as well as per capita, than any other country in the world, including the Soviet Union at their peak, including China, including South Africa at the height of apartheid. You know, it's very expensive in both financial terms as well as human terms, and we're not making any progress. So you look at examples of where things are being done differently and better. And look at Holland. You know, Holland, people can get marijuana if they're 16 years of age or older at a coffee shop. And
Switzerland just decriminalized heroin.
Well, and that's true. They decriminalized.
And it was by a vote of 3/4 of all the people in Switzerland voted.
In Switzerland. Well, we can talk about that too. But to pursue Holland, you know, if you can get marijuana, the Minister of Health of Holland held a press conference maybe 7 or 8 years ago saying we only have half the marijuana usage in our country per capita as you do in the United States. And then he went on to explain why. And he said, you know, we have succeeded in making pot boring.
Right, they don't have 15-year-olds out hustling it. It's just
exactly
there.
Right.
Judge Jim Gray, a great new book. It is a great Christmas gift. Actually, it really is. I mean, this is, again, with the fabric of our country being torn apart, why our drug laws have failed and what we can do about it. Judge Jim Gray, GRAY.com, the website. Thanks for being with us, Judge.
A pleasure.
16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
No more. I'm tired of waking up on the floor. No, and it makes it hard to find me gold. A woman that I know just came from Mallorca, Spain. She smiled because I did not understand. Then she held out a 10-pound bag of cocaine. She said it was the finest in the land. And I said, no, 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 I don't.
There you go. 21 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. And it's getting crazy out there, I'm telling you. This is the Bush legacy one.